Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
It starts with an ordinary house nestled in the heart of Willow Creek. By day, it looks like any other home in the neighborhood. White siding, a picket fence, and a creaky front porch that whispers of years gone by. But behind its doors, something far from ordinary was waiting, watching, and growing stronger with each passing year. Tonight, we explore a childhood shaped by shadows, both the ones cast by the setting sun and those that seem to move of their own accord. A family plagued by strange voices, unexplained forces, and a name whispered in the dark. Mommy Ego. Was this an innocent childhood imagination run wild, or something much, much darker? Through their letter, our storyteller invites us to walk the same halls where cupboards slammed without warning, to tread the same trails where death seemed to linger, and to hear the voice that still echoes in their memory. Their experience leaves us questioning whether the past ever truly stays in the past, or if some places keep a piece of us forever. Let's get to the letter. They write, "Dear Tony, I don't know where to start. Even now, as I write this, my hands are trembling. What happened to me back then isn't something you just forget, no matter how many years go by. It's not something you explain to people easily, either. They usually laugh it off, tell you it was just your imagination or a bad dream. But it wasn't. I know what I saw. I know what I heard. And it all began when I was about 10 years old. My little brother and I spent our afternoons at my Aunt Carol's house while my mom worked late shifts. Aunt Carol lived in what seemed like a normal, quiet house in Willow Creek, a town where not much ever happened. Her home was nothing special, just a two-story with chipped paint, a sagging porch, and a backyard overrun with weeds. To us kids, it was just another place to play. But something about that house always felt wrong. My cousin Mike, who was about a year younger than me, started talking about someone he called Mommy Ego not long after we started going over there. At first, I thought it was just one of those weird imaginary friends that kids invent. He'd say things like, "Mommy Ego doesn't like when you sit there," or "She says we shouldn't go outside today." It creeped me out, but I figured he was just being weird. Then came the day the sinks turned on. It was just a regular afternoon. We were all sitting in the living room watching TV. Aunt Carol had gone out to run errands. A commercial came on, you know, one of those ads about sink filters. And a woman on the screen asked, "Would you like a refreshing glass of water?" Right as she said it, every single sink in the house turned on. Full blast. We stared at each other, frozen. I'll never forget the sound, like a roaring waterfall coming from every corner of the house. Mike just sat there, calm as could be, and said, "It's just Mommy Ego." I got up, trying to act brave, and turned off the kitchen sink. Then I heard water running in the bathroom. I walked in, and that's when I saw them, Snakes. There were at least 10 of them, writhing and coiling around the little barred window above the sink. They weren't inside, but it looked like they were trying to get in. Their bodies slithered against the glass, pressing and twisting as if drawn by something. I screamed, and my aunt's boyfriend came running. He grabbed a garden hoe and killed the snakes outside, but the image of them, how they moved, how they seemed so determined, stuck with me. Things only got worse after that. One afternoon, we went exploring near the creek at the edge of the neighborhood. There was this old bridge we loved to play under. It was covered in graffiti, smelled like mildew, and was home to dozens of bats. It was gross, but it was our spot. As we climbed down the concrete drainage ramp, we saw something move in the bushes. At first, I thought it was a raccoon, or maybe a stray dog, but it was too quick, darting out of sight before we could get a good look. Curiosity got the better of us, so we followed the creek, going deeper into the woods. That's when we saw it. In the water, half submerged and caught in some branches, was the skeleton of a lamb. Its ribs were splayed open like the thing had exploded, and inside its ribcage, coiled like it belonged there, was another snake. This one wasn't moving. It just lay there, lifeless, its milky eyes staring straight at us. We ran. After that, I started noticing small things around my aunt's house, the way doors would creak open on their own, or how the lights would flicker even when the weather was calm. Sometimes, late at night, I'd hear faint whispers in the hallway, almost like a woman singing a lullaby. Mike kept talking about mommy ego, but now I wasn't so sure he was making her up. One night, while we were staying over, everything changed. It was just the three of us, me, Mike, and my little brother, being babysat by Mike's older sisters. We were all piled into Mike's room watching a movie before bed. Around 2 a.m, I woke up to this awful scratching sound, slow, deliberate. It was coming from the other side of the bedroom door. Mike sat up and whispered, "It's her." We all scrambled to the top bunk, huddling together. The scratching got louder, more frantic, and then it stopped. For a moment, I thought it was over. Then we heard it. A soft, distorted voice humming what sounded like a lullaby. We froze. The sound moved closer, slow and deliberate, like someone pacing down the hall. We whispered to each other, trying to figure out what to do, when suddenly the cabinets in the kitchen started slamming open and shut. Dishes shattered, pots and pans clattered to the floor. Then came the screams. The screams weren't ours, not yet at least. They were coming from Mike's sister's room across the hall. We didn't know what to do. We just sat there, frozen, until finally, we worked up the courage to run. We burst out of Mike's room and into his sister's room, where we found them huddled together on the bed, shaking and crying. The closet doors in their room were slamming open and shut over and over, as if some invisible force was tearing through them. The lights were flickering wildly. The TV was switching on and off, and their dresser drawers were being yanked open and shut with such force that clothes were flying out onto the floor. We didn't stay there long. The chaos was too much. We all bolted into the living room where things seemed calmer, for a moment at least. We piled onto the couch together, pulling blankets over our heads like they could somehow protect us. The noise stopped. No slamming doors, no flickering lights, no screaming. It was eerily quiet. Too quiet. Eventually, we worked up the courage to peek out from under the blankets. Everything in the house was a mess. Plates shattered on the floor, drawers pulled open, furniture knocked over. But the strangest thing, Mike's room. Nothing in there had moved, not a single toy out of place. The only thing that had changed was the door. It had deep, jagged gashes carved into it. They weren't random scratches. They were deliberate, like someone or something had dragged sharp claws down the wood again and again. The gouges ran the length of the door, and the floor beneath it was littered with thin, curling strips of wood. We didn't know what else to do, so we grabbed Lucky, Mike's big white lab, and brought her into the room with us. We locked the door and tried to settle down for the night. Lucky was usually fearless, but that night she whimpered and crawled under the bed, refusing to come out. The power went out not long after. We were plunged into total darkness, the kind that makes your skin crawl and your imagination run wild. Then we heard it again, the humming. started softly like it was coming from far away, but it grew louder with each passing moment. The distorted voice of a woman singing a lullaby we couldn't quite make out. Footsteps followed, slow and deliberate, moving closer and closer to the door. Every so often, there was a heavy thump, like something hitting the floor. The doorknob began to jiggle, gently at first, then violently, as if whatever was on the other side was growing impatient. The jiggling stopped, and for a moment, everything was still. Then the pounding began. It wasn't random. It was rhythmic, deliberate. Bang, bang, bang. Each strike made the door rattle in its frame. We stared at it, terrified, waiting for it to give way. Lucky started to growl, low and guttural, but she didn't come out from under the bed. And then it happened. The door flew open with such force that the knob punched a hole in the wall behind it. We screamed, clutching each other, but there was nothing there. No one in the doorway. Just the empty hallway, stretching into darkness. We stayed awake the rest of the night, huddled together in Mike's room. We didn't dare leave until the sun came up. When Aunt Carol got home and saw the state of the house, she was furious. She blamed us for everything, the scratches on the door, the broken dishes, the mess in the living room. We tried to explain, but she wouldn't hear it. That was the last time we stayed overnight at her house. Years later, as an adult, I went back to Willow Creek. I hadn't been there in years, but something kept pulling me back. I had to see it again. The house was still there, though it looked like no one had lived in it for a long time. The yard was overgrown, the paint was peeling, and the windows were dark and empty. I stood there for a while, just staring at it, remembering everything that had happened. I thought I saw something move in one of the upstairs windows. A shadow, maybe. But when I looked again, it was gone. I went back to the creek, too. The bridge was still there, though it was even more run down than I remembered. The bats were gone, but the smell was the same, damp and rotten, like something festering just beneath the surface. And I can't explain what happened in that house or why it still haunts me to this day. All I know is that mommy ego wasn't just something Mike made up. She was real. And sometimes when I close my eyes at night, I still hear her humming. Sincerely, Shannon. Some stories stay with you long after the last word is spoken. This one, well, it crawls under your skin and settles there, doesn't it? What happened in that house in Willow Creek defies easy explanation. Was it a restless spirit tied to the land or the house itself? Or perhaps something darker and older? Something that feeds on fear and chaos. Let's take a step back for a moment. Psychologists might argue that children, particularly those in high stress or emotionally charged environments, are prone to heightened imaginations. The concept of mommy ego could have been a manifestation of fear, a way for young minds to process the strange and unsettling energy in that home. The slamming cabinets, the scratches, even the snakes could be explained away by environmental factors or coincidence, but does that really cover it all? Let's not ignore the undeniable patterns. The humming voice, the precise gouges in the door, and the undeniable intelligence behind the escalating activity suggest something more. Poltergeist activity, perhaps? The deliberate, almost playful chaos, the slamming doors, flickering lights, and pounding certainly fits the description. But what about mommy ego? Could she have been something more intelligent, something less bound by the usual rules of hauntings? And then there's the land itself, the abandoned house, the strange finds at the creek, and the deep, unsettling history hinted at in the story all point to a larger, lingering presence. Was this entity tied to the house alone or to the entire area? The lingering questions are what make this story so chilling. Revisiting their childhood haunts as an adult, only to feel that same oppressive unease, raises a question we may not want to answer. Do places remember us as much as we remember them? Maybe that's why this story is so unsettling. It reminds us that some mysteries are better left unsolved, because sometimes when you look into the darkness, it just might look back. Stay safe out there. And if you hear a lullaby humming where no one should be, well, maybe it's time to leave.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.